Jeff Perlman is with us again. This is a wonderful book. I hope you'll check it out. It's called Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Payton. Jeff, what type of team were the Chicago Bears when he was drafted out of college?
Laughable. Terrible. When he was drafted by the Bears, he was a fourth pick in the first round, 1975, and he did not want to go to Chicago. And he was in his dorm room at Jackson State. There was a different beast back then. You weren't like invited to New York to sit in the Madison Square Garden. And he was in his dorm room, and he got the call that he was drafted by the Bears, and he started crying. And he was with a teammate, Robert Brazil, who was drafted, I think, two picks later by the Houston Oilers. And Brazil is ecstatic. I'm going to Houston. And Payton is devastated because he's going to Chicago, where he knows, A, the team is a joke. The stadium is terrible. The facilities are horrible. And it's like, you know, negative 20 degrees. And this is a guy who used to walk around in shorts and a T-shirt everywhere he went. He was devastated. And the Bears were absolutely terrible. They just gotten rid of their coach, fired their coach, Abe Gibron, replaced him with Jack Pardee. Their quarterback was Bobby Douglas. They had no receivers to speak of. They had high school-level facilities. They used to practice in a park near Soldier Field, and they had to kick the winos out of the park so they could use the facilities there. I mean, it was just the absolute worst franchise to go to at that time.
When did he start to emerge as a premier running back?
I would say his second year, 1970. So, you know, 75 was a rough year for him. He missed one game in his NFL career. It happened his first year. It was against Pittsburgh as a rookie. And Jack Pardee, the coach, thought that he was slacking late in the year. So Pardee actually benched him for Mike Adamley. And maybe the lowest point of Walter Payton's career, sitting on the bench as a rookie in 1975 and watching Mike Adamley run for more than 100 yards against the Pittsburgh Steelers and then not starting the following week, too. So he had a very rough first year. But then in 76, he really started to show something. And you know, he was fast, and he was strong, and he was powerful. And the thing that really separated him was his athleticism. He could just do anything. Walter Payton could walk 100 yards on his hands. You know, Walter Payton could you know, slash and cut and stop on a dime. The guy could hit a golf ball farther than anyone had ever seen. He could dunk a basketball. He had this crazy athleticism. And in 1976, you know, he fought to the very end to win the NFL rushing title, and he ended up losing it to O.J. Simpson. But that was really the year where he was on the map, and people said, man, this guy in Chicago is something.
Jeff, one of the things that I remember when I did a Chicago Bears game one time was that he ran tackle to tackle, and he wasn't a particularly big guy. He was a powerful man, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't particularly big. And I was always amazed when you look at his long career that his body didn't break down more than it actually did. What was the reason for that?
Well, first of all, he was just a specimen, an absolute specimen. And he was I've been using this comparison. Walter Payton was Herschel Walker plus Wayne Corbett. And what I mean is he had all the athletic gifts in the world. So he was like a Herschel Walker. He was as gifted as you could be. But he also was the hardest worker, sort of like when Corbett was here with the Jets here in New York. And the guy wasn't the greatest athlete, but he worked his tail off. Payton was both of them. You know, he combined it all. He worked and worked and worked. He wasn't a weightlifter. He was a runner, and he would run along the banks of the Pearl River in Mississippi and build up these insane leg muscles. I mean, his legs were like pieces of metal. One of the guys who worked for the Bears described him as an iron ball covered with skin, and he just was a machine. And you could go your whole life and not meet an athlete like Walter Payton. I think that was the number one key. And number two was it was him delivering a lot of the hits. He was not a guy to absorb punishment. He was a guy to give it out. So he probably didn't take as many beatings as perhaps he would have otherwise.
There are a couple of things in the promotional material about the book, a couple of questions that surprised me. Maybe you can answer them. One of the questions was he a great teammate or a selfish one? And I was surprised to hear the last two words, selfish one, because I never heard that about him.
Well, it's interesting. He was, you know, a lot of the great athletes, Jerry Rice, Alex Rodriguez in baseball, Michael Jordan, certainly. Sort of one of the things that drives their greatness is a selfishness, to be known as the best, to achieve more than anyone else. They want to, you know, Walter Payton desperately wanted to be the NFL rushing leader every year. He always had someone on the sidelines whisper to him how many yards he had, how far was he from 100. You know, the rushing titles meant a great deal to him. And I think the most sort of emblematic example of this, or the best example of this, is Super Bowl 20. When the Bears won, this should have been the crowning achievement of Walter Payton's career. And it's the end of the game. It's 46-10. It's a blowout. He's, you know, finally winning the Super Bowl. And Walter Payton is absolutely devastated. Devastated. Because, A, he fumbled on the second offensive play of the game. And, B, because, you know, as has kind of famously been known, Jim McMahon scores twice, Matt Sui scores, and then the Fridge scores, and Peyton really felt slighted. And he, this is it, the biggest moment of his life, big career, you know, big win, and he storms off into the locker room by himself, rips off his jersey, and hides in a broom closet and cries. And his agent has to come in and say, if you continue to do this, if you behave this way, you will be known for the rest of your career and probably the rest of your life as the guy who moped after winning a Super Bowl. So he had that in him. He certainly did.
Mike Ditka, I think he later apologized for not giving him a play to try to take it in, did he not?
He did. And he, you know, I always thought the criticism of Ditka was really unfair. I mean, you're coaching the Super Bowl. You know, this is like a great moment, a joyful moment. And it's a very, you know, I asked Boomer Esiason the other day, the former Bengal quarterback. I was on his show in New York, and I said, did you ever play with a guy who needed a touchdown in a game? You know, who the game wouldn't be complete unless he scored. And he said, no, I really never did. And it's very unusual. You know, it's not like you think, oh, I have to get so-and-so his touchdown. You know, it's a weird thing. And I don't think Ditka should be to blame at all for not getting him one. I don't think it's an obvious thing that you're supposed to do in football.
The other thing you asked, did he want to retire after 13 seasons or was he forced out? I had heard some whisperings that at that particular time in the latter stages that they were already thinking about transition on him. What's the story there?
Well, he didn't want to retire. He wanted to keep playing. And, you know, the Bears a year earlier had drafted Neil Anderson. He was a very, very good running back, and at that time a better running back than Walter Payton was. He was fast. He was young. He could get around the end insanely, you know, quick. And, you know, Payton didn't like it. He didn't really take to Anderson that well. And he felt like he could still contribute. But the Bears basically said to his agent, Bud Holmes, you know, we're going in a different direction, and we're going to have to do something about this. And what happened is, you know, Peyton sort of begrudgingly agreed to retire. And part of the dangling carrot was he had talked with Pete Rozelle, the commissioner, about becoming the first minority owner in the NFL. And there were expansion opportunities coming up. And Peyton retired and almost immediately started working on bringing an expansion franchise to St. Louis. And he was the front man, not the money man, but the front man for this effort. And it was really thought to be a sure thing. They had the money, they had the different investors, and it fell through. And this is something Peyton put his heart into for two and a half years, where he was doing all these, you know, engagements and rubber chicken dinners and speaking nonstop about sort of, you know, football in St. Louis and what we can do. And when that came crashing through, when that collapsed, he was devastated, absolutely devastated.
You alluded to it a little bit early, and I think it's significant in his life, and that was the fact that here is a kid that comes out of the South but finds a success and glory in the North in Chicago, and that's a blue-collar type of town. Tell me about the relationship between Walter Payton and the city of Chicago.
Well, they loved him. You know, people make the comparison with Michael Jordan. I actually don't think it's a good comparison. I think the fans related to Walter – the fans were more dazzled, perhaps, by Michael Jordan. You know, he was unprecedented. But I think the fans related better with Walter Payton because, A, you know, Payton was there. Payton would sign anything. Payton would talk to anyone. You could have, you know, I have a story. There's a story at the end of my book that I absolutely love. There was a guy, I can't remember his name. It's at the end of my book. My favorite Walter Payton story, actually, is a kid goes up to Walter Payton. His dad takes him to Lake Forest for training camp. And Peyton comes up to him. He's like 13 or 12 at the time. And Peyton says, hey, come here, come here. Introduces him to the different players, gives him his wristbands, you know, and it's the kid's greatest day. And like, I think it was 15 years later, the guy was working for an AM radio station in suburban Illinois. And he's at Bears camp. He's at the Bears facility. And Walter Payton comes walking down the hallway. And the kid who's now a man says, hey, Walter. And Walter says, hey, how you doing? And Walter looks at him and says, we've met before, haven't we? And this is a guy who was 13 and now he's 28. And he goes, yeah, but there's no way you would remember me. And Walter Payton goes, I have a crazy memory. Try me. And he goes, well, I was a kid. And the guy, and Walter Payton goes, were you wearing a green shirt? And the guy goes, yeah. And he goes, were you with a really tall man in a purple hat? This is 15 years later. He goes, yeah. He goes, I remember you exactly. And he was blown away. And there are a million stories of Walter Payton pulling stuff like that off, remembering people, signing autographs for people, taking people aside. You know, he was on a flight, another story from the book that I love. He was on a flight from Chicago to Orlando, and the flight attendant announces, says, ladies and gentlemen, we have a boy, Billy Kohler, who's flying to Orlando for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. et cetera, et cetera. Peyton says to the flight attendant, why don't you bring the boy up to first class? Don't tell him I'm here, just bring him up. Kid comes up to first class, and he's greeted by Walter Payton. Walter Payton, you know, bends down on one knee, 20 minutes, you can do it, you can fight this, you have, you know, your courage is greater than anything I know on a football field. He's never met this kid before. It just gives him a 20-minute all-time pep talk. And that was just him. That was him. He put himself out there for these people, and that's why they love him so much.
Jeff Perlman is with us, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about the off-field, Walter Payton, the things that a lot of people are talking about, and put it into perspective, because I think as you hear Jeff talk about it, Walter Payton was a special athlete, but I also think a special person. We continue with more of You in Sports Byline.